Walker versus Social Security Administration Commissioner. Okay. Good morning, Mr. Allenstein.
Good morning, Judge. Panel.
Good morning. Was it cold in Gadsden this morning?
It's chilly. Hey, Judge, let me just say I have my daughter, Rose Allenstein, who is an attorney of record, here with me.
And oh, that's right.
I'll present the argument, but she's here present at this meeting.
That's glad to hear, Mr. Allenstein, that the traditions continue in the family.
Thank you.
You can begin.
Oh, thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank the panel for allowing oral argument under these difficult situations. And I wanted to say that I first represented Mr. Walker before this court. I did not represent him in any of the lower court proceedings.
Okay.
This claim was referred to me by other counsel. And Mr. Walker is 48 years of age on his date of last insured. He severely injured his back in a work-related injury on 5/7/11 while lifting an air conditioning unit. I won't go into the other background based on your assurance that...
we understand all that. I mean, it seems to me your basic argument, Mr. Allenstein, has been about Judge Posner's opinion.
Yes,
and faulting the commission, the vocational expert and medical doctor for opining about your clients, whether your client's disabled, unable to work, and the administrative law judge saying that's a decision reserved to the commissioner. But it does seem to me that in this case, all the administrative law judge was saying it was that the ultimate issue of whether your client is disabled for purposes of the Social Security Act is a decision reserved to the commissioner. And then it goes on to consider whether the proper issues about which those two experts opined was supported by the record or not, which is precisely what the act contemplates. Am I missing something?
I would say that the primary issue in the case is whether the judge erred in holding that an opinion reserved for the commissioner is applicable. And the phrase is in the AR regulation. I'm sorry.
It's in the administrative record. It's something that the AOJ said, but the AOJ would be right to say that whether the applicant is disabled for purposes of the act or not is the ultimate issue. That's something that the commissioner gets to decide, isn't it?
Yes, but it was improperly applied to this case because both the judge said that and the AOJ said that, and Judge Posner's decision, I think, is right on point. The 11th Circuit has never addressed Judge Posner's decision, and when they held it was a decision reserved for the commissioner, that was just an error. They should not have ruled that. And yes, if they had not said that, they might have supported the decision on other grounds. You're correct. But they still relied upon that holding. And Judge Posner said that remark is imprecise. The regulation says that a statement by a medical source that you are disabled or unable does not mean that you will determine that you are disabled. That's not the same as saying such a statement is proper and therefore to be ignored. And we ask this court to embrace Judge Posner's decision and remand the case for a denial, holding that the denial was improperly denied because it was held to be an issue reserved for the commissioner.
And basically then, I mean, from your perspective, that's the heart of the case, isn't it?
Yes. And whether
this AOJ committed the same kind of error that Judge Posner said had occurred in that case, right, and whether we agree with that reasoning or not.
And,
is that right?
Yes, And the Jorson decision has never been cited by the 11th Circuit. And the holding is creating confusion in the district courts. We handle quite a few Social Security cases, and we see that language a lot. And it's unclear when that language is applicable and when it's not applicable. And I would say it is applicable when a medical source just says he's not disabled. However, it's not applicable when they have a thorough analysis of the case, especially like the Dr. Crunk. He had a thorough analysis, issued a thorough report, was subject to cross-examination. And so he's not just issuing an opinion, he's writing a thorough report. And so the holding, as judge in the Jorson decision, is just not applicable in this case. And of course,
what part of the CFR would you say best supports your argument that that kind of decision is not reserved to the commissioner? Do you have a CFR site for that?
Yes, 20 CFR 404-1527.
Mm-hmm. So as I look at that, it says medical source opinions on issues reserved to the commissioner. So that to me, maybe the better reading of that is that the commissioner actually does ultimately consider the evidence and make that decision. What language in there do you see that points you in a different direction?
Let's see, in paragraph B, it says we will always consider medical opinions in your case. And that is section two mm-hmm. under that paragraph. Oh, let's see, I'm sorry.
Take your time.
Patients.
Sure. I want to make sure I best understand your argument.
Okay. Yeah. Paragraph D1 says a medical opinion that you are disabled or unable to work does not mean that we will determine that you are disabled. So the regulation says we will not rely upon that statement. Instead, we will look at the whole evidence. But in this case, I believe the district judge and the ALJ relied on that conclusion and failed to evaluate the claim on the wholeness of the record and the wholeness of the report. And in this case, we have much more than just that statement. We have a thorough analysis by the treating physician as well as vocational expert. And so what I'm asking the court to do is embrace the Jorson decision and give direction to the district courts on when it's applicable and appropriate decision.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
One more point.
Okay.
The plaintiff in this case is no longer insured. He's not eligible for SSI, so his receiving benefits is dependent upon winning this case at the 11th Circuit and having a remand to determine the case without relying upon that phrase is the commissioner's decision. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Allenstein. You saved some time for rebuttal. Mr. Johns.
Hey, please, court. My name is Marcus Johns.
Mr. Johns, if you could turn up the volume, and I can't hear you very well.
Terribly sorry, sir. May it please the court. My name is Marcus Johns, and I appear on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. As an initial matter, this court should not follow or adopt Bjornson in this circuit. Bjorn, as an initial matter, the court is certainly not bound by a Seventh Circuit case. And while Bjornson may be persuasive, it's certainly not binding on this court. Second, the Seventh Circuit remanded in Bjornson because it found that the ALJ mischaracterized medical evidence. That is not the case here. And lastly, Bjornson is inopposite because here the ALJ did not ignore Mr. Crunk's or Dr. Crunk's or Dr. Herrera's opinions. Rather, the ALJ explained why those opinions were inconsistent with the record. So on
let's go back to your first point. Do you think Judge Posner's opinion is correct?
So I think it's dicta. I think what he had to say was dicta.
Okay.
I think that it is, I think it is correct, Judge, that an ALJ cannot say, well, this opinion is reserved to the commissioner, and so I don't have to consider it. Under the regs, the ALJ and the commissioner is to consider all of the evidence. And as Judge Posner pointed out in Bjornson, in accordance with the reg, it says a statement by a medical source that you are disabled or unable to work does not mean that we will determine that you are disabled. But by the same token, it doesn't mean that we're not going to determine that you're disabled. Right. And that's the role of the judge or the administrative law judge. And I think the disconnect between what plaintiff is or appellant is arguing here is that the ALJ in this case did not stop the analysis. The ALJ went on and he said, I'm giving this opinion little weight and here's why. And so the error, if you will, that's in Bjornson is not present in this case. And this court should not rely on that case to decide this. If I may, I would like to say that the court should affirm the commissioner's final decision on really two grounds. One is procedurally, and then one is substantively. And procedurally, it's our position that the arguments that Mr. Walker raises here were not raised at the district court. To be sure, he did challenge the weight that the ALJ gave the opinion evidence, including Dr. Crunk's opinion and Dr. Herrera's. But he did not challenge the ALJ statement that the opinions were on issues reserved to the commissioner. And he did not argue, as far as Dr. Herrera is concerned, that the ALJ substituted his opinion. Accordingly, procedurally, this court should decline to address the merits of his arguments. But setting aside the procedural issue, Mr. Walker, again, would have you believe that the ALJ simply disregarded Dr. Crunk's and Dr. Herrera's opinion because they were on an issue reserved to the commissioner. But again, that is not what happened. Yes, the ALJ did state that, but the ALJ also considered the opinions and explained why he gave those opinions little weight. Substantial evidence supports those reasons. This court should affirm. I note that plaintiff really doesn't challenge the sufficiency of that substantial evidence. But you know, let's turn to the ALJ's evaluation of Dr. Crunk's opinion, which was given in the context of Mr. Walker's workers' comp case. Dr. Crunk said he's not capable of working. Well, as Chief Judge pointed out, again, the commissioner is tasked with that ultimate decision of whether or not someone's disabled. We can't abdicate it and give it to a vocational consultant. The ALJ noted, however, that it was on an issue reserve. That's true.
It might very well mean that that the individual is unable to perform their past work, something that is actually something that the commissioner would agree with, right?
That's absolutely correct, George, Judge. The ALJ limited this individual to sedentary work, and so it's clear that he had difficulties. He could not. There was another Dr. Reynolds, I believe it was, who said he could return to light work, but the business where he was working at no longer didn't have a light job that he could do. So you're exactly right.
Dr. Crunk, Dr. Crump's a vocational rehabilitation specialist, right? A PhD, not a medical doctor.
That is correct, Judge. He is not a medical doctor.
So he wouldn't get the same, the ALJ would not be required to give that opinion testimony the same kind of weight that an ALJ must give to a treating physician's opinion.
Exactly, Judge. You are correct. You are correct. And with regard to, you know, Mr. Crook's opinion, the ALJ went on and explained why it was not consistent with the medical evidence, and he gave good reasons. We can go into those if you'd like. And then turning to Dr. Herrera's opinion. Now here we do have a treating physician, and so that regulation that plaintiff mentioned earlier, 1527, does certainly come into play. So it was absolutely proper under the regulations for the ALJ to say, hey, this medical opinion is on an issue reserved to the commissioner. So, and again, Dr. Herrera said that
does that mean that the administrative law judge did not consider any of Dr. Herrera's opinion?
Oh, no, sir. No, sir. The judge went on, the ALJ went on to then say, I give this opinion little weight, and here's why. And he gave several reasons with regard to the medical evidence. There's inconsistencies in the medical evidence, including Dr. Herrera's own medical notes. The other thing he pointed out was that Dr. Herrera talked about plaintiffs having side effects that would be, you know, disabling side effects. But the ALJ noted that plaintiff's own report to Dr. Herrera said, I don't have any side effects. So there's inconsistency between Dr. Herrera's opinion, the statements of Mr. Walker to his doctor. And so all these are good reasons for the ALJ to give that opinion little weight. And, you know, Judge, in the panel, you know, if you look at Dr. Herrera's opinion, it's just a checkbox form. I mean, it's really not well supported, and certainly the ALJ found it wasn't consistent with the record. Lastly, I wanted to just turn.
Really, what this case comes down to, from your in a nutshell, is you don't have a quarrel with Judge Posner's opinion for the Seventh Circuit. You just say, in this case, based on this record, it's distinguishable because the limited reference to what is reserved to the commissioner did not mean that the administrative law judge failed to consider all of their opinions. In fact, it went on to explain how those opinions were otherwise inconsistent with the record.
Absolutely, Judge. Absolutely. Lastly,
that's really it in a nutshell, isn't it?
Absolutely, Judge. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. I want to just touch on one last argument that plaintiff made. Again, we argue that he waived this because he didn't raise it below, but the ALJ did not substitute his judgment for Dr. Herrera in giving that opinion little weight. Mm-hmm. As this court well knows, the ALJ is responsible for determining a claimant's RFC based on all the evidence. An ALJ does not substitute his judgment for that of a doctor by carrying out his regulatory role as an adjudicator responsible for assessing a claimant's RFC. Here, the ALJ did not diagnose plaintiff with any type of medical condition. The ALJ didn't make medical findings, and the ALJ did not act in any way like a doctor. Rather, the ALJ acted like a judge, weighed the evidence, considered the law and the facts with the regulations, and made the decision. So in conclusion, and I've got some time, but in conclusion, this court should not entertain arguments Mr. Walker did not make below. Nevertheless, substantial evidence supports the ALJ's decision, and the ALJ appropriately considered Dr. Crump's and Dr. Herrera's opinions, and this court should affirm the commissioner's final decision.
Okay. Judge Chauvin, Judge Grant, y'all have any questions? Okay. Mr. Allenstein, you've saved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. Judge, in answer to your question, is Judge Foster's decision correct? I say, yes, it is correct. It's a holding that should be embraced. It's persuasive. Also, it's a decision that should be embraced by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And the issue in this case is, was there an error by the district court and ALJ? Both the district court and the ALJ relied upon, this is an opinion of an issue reserved for the commissioner. And that should not have been what this case turned on. The case should have turned on what opposing counsel argued, but that's not before the court. The court is, was there an error in the judge's decision and was there an error in the ALJ decision? And I say, yes, there was an error because they held this is an opinion on an issue reserved for the commissioner. Judge, we see this phrase many times in district court decisions. There needs to be clarity given to the district courts when and if this phrase is a deciding issue in a case. In this case, and again, it needs to be eliminated as an issue if it's not supported by the evidence. I would point out too that Dr. Crook's report was not just a report by a vocational expert who is not a medical physician, but it was supported by Dr. Herrera's opinion and records, who is a medical expert. And Judge, we know there's new rules in effect for opinions, but this is an old case, and so the old rules are applicable, not the new rules. Again, my client has worked all of his life. He had a severe back injury. We believe he's entitled to a fair hearing and decision without being denied on the phrase, this is an opinion on an issue reserved for the commissioner. We thank you for the opportunity to argue the case today.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Allenstein. I think we understand your argument. That concludes the cases that we want to hear this morning. We're going to be in recess until tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.